Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
To tell about this guy, you all know me, and we're scared as hell. He comes to me at night after I call into bed.
Tonight, we're asking a question. What scares you? Spiders, snakes, heights, ghosts, the dark. We all have things that frighten us, real or imagined, a little or a lot. Well, what are those things, and why do they scare us? It is a perfect conversation for this Halloween night. Joining us to talk about this is clinical psychologist Dr. Nicole Cutts, and we want to hear from you tonight. Lines are open. Want to know what scares you? 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Hey, Dr. Cutts, how are you?
Hey, Harold, how are you? I'm well.
Good, good, good. Let's dig right in. How do you define a phobia? And what is the difference between a phobia and being afraid of something?
So a phobia rises to that level of being a diagnosable problem or issue. And it... The simple definition is that it's an irrational fear of something that poses little or no danger. And it can be something that has some danger to it, but your phobia goes beyond the level of danger that it poses. So let's say, for example, you might have arachnophobia, you know, the fear of spiders, and just seeing a picture of a spider sends you into panic. That would be a phobia versus a fear. Now, a fear is something that is more manageable. You know, it might be unique to you, but it doesn't rise to that level of being diagnosable or necessarily being irrational.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a great explanation, because there are people, for example, who are afraid of snakes. And while we know that not all snakes are poisonous or dangerous, some of them are.
Right.
And some of them actually are deadly. But then you have some people who, as you just suggested, are afraid of even seeing them. Where does that come from? Where does the irrational part come from when there is no clear and present danger from something that someone is afraid of?
Well, unfortunately, we don't really know the cause of phobias or the origins of them. Some of them, you know, you can say, well, this particular thing happened at a time in this person's life. Let's say, for example, somebody in their youth fell from a great height and then developed later on a fear of heights. But that's not always the case. So the truth is that we're not really clear on the etiology of these phobias.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is our Halloween night conversation. We are talking about fears and phobias. What are you afraid of? A few things, one thing, quite a few. Do you know why? Give us a call at 202-319-7810. I want to hear what you are afraid of. So here's something else, and I find this really very fascinating, that some people, for example, are afraid of clowns. And yet, as we know from certainly childhood and going to the circus, clowns are supposed to bring us joy and laughter, and they're silly. But why are some people afraid of clowns?
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I find there are a lot of people who are afraid of clowns.
A lot. Quite a few.
And as as children, you know, they're also children who are afraid of Santa Claus. They're afraid of the Easter Bunny. So, you know, for children, while they're meant to be funny or silly, you know, you're seeing something that's very different. You know, you're seeing somebody in a mask. I don't know the specific cause of the fear of clowns, which is called coulrophobia, which is interesting.
There's a name for the fear of clowns.
Oh, yeah, there are names for all of these specific phobias that are, you know, pretty, like, we know arachnophobia, we know agoraphobia, but there are many phobias that people have that yes, have names. So that fear of clowns, you know, you're looking at somebody who has makeup on their face. You know, they're obscured. They look out of the ordinary, unusual. You know, you have different people have these phobias for different reasons, but many people express not necessarily a phobia, but a fear of clowns. They think they're creepy. Mm-hmm. I hear that a lot.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking tonight about your fears. What are you afraid of? Are you just a little afraid, or do you have a phobia, whether it's heights or animals or something really, really serious? We'd like to hear from you. Let's go to the phone lines. Jeffrey calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Jeffrey. What's on your mind?
Hello there.
How are you?
Good. Good. Except when I'm in small spaces. I have claustrophobia. I started by having dreams of being in tight spaces. And then now I can't sit in the back seat of a car. Mm-hmm. I was on an international flight, 8-hour flight to Amsterdam, and I could not, I couldn't sit in the middle seat. I needed mm-hmm. an aisle seat, and they couldn't reassign me. And so I literally stood for 8 hours.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. That's another common phobia, claustrophobia.
So how do you deal with that, Jeffrey?
It's been a challenge. It's been a very big challenge. I just, I try to breathe through it. I try to breathe through it, and sometimes I'm successful, sometimes I'm not. A lot of times I just have to get the heck out of the car. I can't be in that backseat of an Uber.
Mm-hmm. So have you sought professional help, Jeffrey? Because a phobia like that, usually it's best handled by a professional who has expertise in treating phobias.
Well, I haven't found one that has an expertise in treating phobias. I'm open to it, though.
Yeah, I would. You know, one of the things you can do is you can go on psychologytoday.com, and it lists people's areas of expertise and specialty, because phobias do require specific treatment. The treatments are usually cognitive, behavioral, as well as sometimes medication. But there are a few different types of techniques that people are expertise in using to help people to overcome those phobias, because, like what you're mentioning, they can be very debilitating. You know, they can change the quality of your life or your circumstances. So that's something that you might want to explore.
Mm. Okay.
Jeffrey, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're asking tonight, what are you afraid of? What scares you? Do you have a phobia? Let's go to Tammy. Tammy calling from Maryland. Tammy, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So I have a couple phobias, but one of the main concern that I guess I face daily is driving over bridges or ramps. I feel as though I want to drive off of it. So I try to stay in the middle lane, but my mind kind of shifts if I want to drive, you know, with the water on the right or left, drive in the direction of the water to go over it.
Mm-hmm.
Or just now when there's increasingly amount of ramps being built. So just getting on the ramp is very narrow. I just didn't want to drive off of it.
Mm. What is that, Doc?
Well, it's another common fear, unfortunately. It's called Jeffrophobia.
It's called what?
Jeffrophobia.
Jeffrophobia.
It's with a Jeffrophobia. And a lot of people have that fear of bridges, and especially driving over them. So, you know, you'll notice sometimes when you're crossing, let's say, the Bay Bridge, they will say, you know, if you have a problem, you know, they have somebody who will drive you over the bridge.
Yes, indeed they do.
Tammy, do you also have a fear of heights?
Not really. I haven't ridden on a plane. I took a plane ride, but it was like only for an hour or two, and I was okay. But I think if it was longer, something inside of me would have risen up to probably like try to get off the plane somehow. Because I'm just okay. You know, it'll kick in that you're up very, very high. But like I said, the bridges is what I face daily because I have to go over ramps. I have to, you know, that's just the way, you know. But
right.
Everything is being built now, so.
So we asked our last caller, but have you sought help for this, you know, professional, because this is something, again, that's very treatable?
I had a fear of that as well, because I would think, okay, I'd seek help, and then I think in my mind, when I'm back in that situation, it'll all just plunder everything that I was built up to, you know, condition my mind to get help for, and seem like, you know, whether it's, what do they call it, mind, you know, to set your mind or take pills. I would just think that when I got back on the bridge or the ramp, that it'll go away and I'll just freak out again. Like, it'll just...
Yeah, you might want... I can understand your, you know, your fear of it coming back, but somebody who's expert in treating you will know how to help you through that as well. You know, there are people who will help you through successive relaxation, gradual exposure to whatever the thing is that produces the phobia in you, and they help you get over it slowly. Sometimes, you know, people have had luck with hypnotherapy. So there are a lot of treatment modalities that people who are expert in dealing with phobias can use.
Well, Tammy, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about phobias, fears. What are you afraid of? Tammy mentioned something that made me think, Dr. Cutts, because, I don't like driving over bridges. It does make me nervous, but what I call it a phobia that causes, as she said, causes me to freak out. No, I just do it. But here's the thing. I don't know whether I would call it a fear of heights or a discomfort in an airplane when the plane takes off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not bothered. I'm not bothered by heights. I have skydived.
Mm-hmm.
It was never a problem. However, and I remember this very, very clearly, well before 9/11, going up into the observation deck of the World Trade Center, my anxiety and nervousness standing near that window, it was extremely uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's the difference between standing or at the, it's called the CN Tower in Toronto, again, one of the tallest buildings in North America, making me feel extremely uncomfortable, and yet hot air ballooning, skydiving, airplanes, no problem for me. What's going on there?
I'm not really sure. I do know that a lot of times people who have a fear of heights or acrophobia are not afraid of flying in planes. It usually does manifest itself when you're standing on something and looking down. But it doesn't explain for me how you're not afraid of hot air ballooning or skydiving.
Mm-hmm.
We might have to find a special.
Yeah, especially the jumping out of the plane part.
Yeah, you can jump out of a plane.
Yeah,
but
there's something wrong with me.
I mean, it's unique to me to hear that. I'm not saying it's that unusual, but I have not heard of that before.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about fears and phobias. What are you afraid of? Maria, calling from Reston, Virginia. Maria, what's on your mind?
Well, I believe I know what caused the phobia.
What is it?
I am afraid to, well, I'm lesser afraid now, but I used to be extremely afraid to close my eyes while I washed my hair because the soap would cover my eyes and my ears, mm-hmm. so I couldn't see or hear what was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And the two movies that caused that, you know, I watched them when I was young, and because of that, I wouldn't let my children or my grandchildren watch scary movies while they're little, because I really have a hard time letting the soap get over my eyes and my ears. I can't see anything coming.
Right.
I know something's coming.
Yeah, you feel almost certain of it.
Yeah,
that's the problem with phobias, is that even though you can, in this moment, say that, okay, I know that's irrational, I'm in my house, the doors are locked, but in the moment when you're exposed to the situation or the stimuli, it seems, you know, real. It seems very real.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Maria, stay on the line, because I want to ask you about that, but I have to take a break. But I do have a question or questions for you. Also, Pam in Virginia, we want to talk to you, so please do not hang up. We are talking about fears, phobias. What are you afraid of? This is our Halloween night conversation. If you're having difficulty getting through, don't be afraid. Just keep dialing 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We will get to as many phone calls as we can, so please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
And we had just gotten back off tour last night, so the gang and I thought that it would be groovy if we summon up the posse and dumb rush the movies. I got Angie, Jeff got Tina. Ready,
welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. On this Halloween night, we are asking you, what are you afraid of? What scares you and why? My guest is Dr. Nicole Cutts. She is a clinical psychologist, and lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise we will get to you. We were talking to Maria, who says that she was afraid of getting soap in her eyes or ears when she's shampooing her hair. That makes a lot of sense in that when you are shampooing or just washing, getting soap in your eyes where you can't open them, and you're really eliminating two of your five senses, even temporarily. So I can see how that could be uncomfortable, Dr. Cutts.
Yes, definitely. There is some, you know, part of that makes sense, but then, you know, that's the irrational part that kicks in.
Yeah. So you said this came from watching movies. Was it a specific movie, or was it, what was it, Maria? Maria, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, go right ahead. So what was it? Was it a specific movie, like Psycho or something like that, or what was it?
There was a movie called Crest, where a hand walked around on its fingers,
mm-hmm.
climbed up on beds, and choke people.
That's terrible.
Oh my.
Right. So it's not just being scared in the shower. I would actually think this hand is going to climb on the curtain, mm-hmm. and get me. As well as this other movie I watched where this lady was abducted by aliens and Air Force, that the aliens had put a needle in her stomach to see if she was pregnant. So I knew. I just knew the hand was going to get me, and the needle was going to go in.
so they combined.
Yeah.
They combined, which made it even worse, because, I mean, I lickety-split would do my hair quick,
mm-hmm.
just so I could get over that. Now, I said it's lesser now that I'm older, because my husband, who did not know I had the phobia, it's not something I share with everybody, he decided to come in and scare me in the shower.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, maybe you should have told him.
So, well, no, well, she said it helped, actually.
It helped?
Because what happened is I screamed, and I went straight down to the bottom of the tub, you know, with my knees and my feet, and I thought to myself, you better get up and fight.
Oh,
and I came up fighting, and he was like, oh, stop, it's just me, it's just me.
So, how's your relationship with your husband?
It's fine.
Good.
It's
I'm
fine.
Glad. Good for him. Maria.
Notice, it knocked most of that phobia out of me.
Well, thank you so much.
That's implosion therapy.
What's that?
That's implosion therapy.
Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah. When that's one of the ways that people can become desensitized to phobias is by sudden exposure to it. So it's flooding or implosion therapy. You just like, boom. You know, the other type that's more popular is to successively expose someone to the stimuli. You know, like you look at a picture of something and you get closer and closer. But the other, one of the other treatments, I don't know if they still use it these days, but would be, you know, implosion. They would just, you know, like maybe if you had a fear of a plane, just put you on the plane and take off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Maria, I hope that you continue to have a really good relationship with your husband.
He did her a favor.
Yes, he really did. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your call.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go to Renee. Renee calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Renee. What's on your mind?
So I'm claustrophobic.
Okay.
And so when I have MRIs, I have to have a Valium. Garages make me nervous. But worse than that, when I'm buried, I want to be in a mausoleum, and I'm afraid of tight spots. So not sure what to do about that.
Okay, back up for a moment, please. You said when you're buried?
Yes. You know, you plan for, you know, your funeral and everything.
Yeah.
So I want to be in a crypt, but they're very tight. My aunt was buried in one, and that is a very small, tight spot.
Well, you know, once you're dead, you're not, that may not be something you should worry about.
You're being that's the rational thing.
Right. But forgive me for being evolved.
Well, it's not that. That's the nature of fears and phobias, is that they are not necessarily rational.
Right.
So, you know, what Renee is saying is that, yeah, she's aware of that intellectually, but because, see, what happens with fears and phobias is that the fear centers of our brain are activated. You know, the amygdala is the part of the brain that's most associated with fear.
Mm-hmm.
And a certain mechanism kicks in. You know, we have the whole fight or flight thing, and a certain mechanism kicks in when we're afraid, and it also forms memories. You know, so if, like our last caller was talking about having seen that movie, so it can get in there really early. And then you continue to experience the fear, and what happens is that, you know, in neurobiology, they say the fire together, wired together. So anytime that Renee thinks about this, she continues to feel this, and it's actually, in a lot of ways, it's reinforcing that fear.
Okay.
Right? And the problem, or the part of the challenge, is that that part of our brain, you know, the amygdala and the, you know, what people used to refer to as the reptilian parts of our brain, they act a lot of times somewhat independently of our intellect.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you know, like you've experienced this with all emotions, you know, you might be in love with someone who you know intellectually is terrible for you, right? So there's a disconnect between our intellect and our emotion.
I see.
And so that's what it sounds like Renee is dealing with. Renee, I've asked a few other callers, have you sought treatment for your claustrophobia?
Not yet.
I'm sorry?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay, well, it's, you know, it's a if it's something that you find debilitating, enough or uncomfortable with enough, you might consider. And I would, again, suggest working with somebody who's an expert in treating phobias and, you know, anything like panic disorders, because typically what happens is these phobias bring on a reaction, if not an actual panic disorder, that are similar to panic attacks.
And to that point where I think Renee, or if it wasn't Renee, maybe a previous caller said something about taking medication to, mm-hmm. I guess, calm you down, you know, and the like. Is that recommended? Is that helpful? I mean, I've seen some people who, when they get on planes, they take a sleeping pill.
Yeah. Well, it is recommended by some doctors and psychiatrists. Typically, the best case, the best practice treatment might be some kind of psychotropic medication that's not just for the moment, mm-hmm. but an anxiety reducing, an anxiolytic, combined with some form of psychotherapy.
Yeah.
But it is also sometimes, because it's just a specific instance, that people will take something in the moment in order to relax them. And that the challenge with that for some people, you know, is that some of those things can be habit forming.
Yeah.
You know, so, but there, if it's not a problem for you, then it is something that some people can just take on an as needed basis in okay. those situations.
Renee, thank you so much for your phone call. One of the things, Dr. Cutts, when you talk about, for example, having a panic attack, mm-hmm. and again, I go back to the airplane thing. You know, post 9/11, being claustrophobic mm-hmm. on an airplane cannot just be an issue for you. It can be, if you have a panic attack, that can be really, really dangerous, considering the world in which we live in, and heightened security and the like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, there are instances of people, you know, who will get start to panic, and people think, oh my gosh, why are they so excessively nervous? Is something going on? And again, that's where things are really affecting your life. You know, like most disorders, especially in the psychological realm, a part of the criterion that raises it to the level of a disorder is that it has a debilitating effect on your life.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Pam, calling from Reston, Virginia. Pam, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have a fear of needles, mm-hmm. and I have a fear of dogs.
I'm with you with the dogs. I'm so, I don't do dogs, Pam. No.
Neither.
No.
I'm convinced that any dog will bite you.
Absolutely, yes.
Yes.
I am
No.
Where does that come from, the dog thing?
You know what? For me, as a little girl, I didn't get bit, but one came very close to biting me. I'm just riding my bike, and he just came out of nowhere, and he was going to bite me if this man had come out with his rake and shoot him away.
How old were you?
I was about 8, 9, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can often be something like that, you know, at that age, it just makes like I was talking about to the last caller, it creates a very strong memory associated with the fear center of your brain, and it gets kind of, you know, for lack of better words, lodged there. Because also what you experienced as a child was that there was nothing you could do in that situation to avoid it, right? So that's also a lot of times what can be very scary for people. It's like there was no protection against
There's no way out.
Yeah.
There's no way out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pam, if that man hadn't come out, he would have bitten me.
I'm so with you. I am so with you. 5 years old, I was bitten in the face by a collie, the right side of my face. And you know, as an adult, I know why.
the collie had puppies right over here on 48th Place in Northeast DC, mm-hmm. right in my grandmother's house. Yeah. And I pet the puppy. Collie didn't like it and tried to take my face off. After that, I'm good with dogs.
Yeah.
I don't care whether it's a pit bull, Dalmatian, Great Dane, one of the
dogs. What if it's a little? Like,
yeah. No, we're not. Those are the mean. Those are the worst. The little ones.
So, okay, like a little tiny.
Yeah, we're not doing
even
that.
Those? Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, because they all have teeth.
Right. So see that rises to the level of phobia. But again, it makes sense. That was a very kind of almost like flashbulb memory. You know, something that was very dramatic and traumatic to happen at that age, that lodged in your psyche and in your memory as, you know, below the level of your intellect.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's also why a lot of these things are treated through hypnosis and other means that get you on a somatic or a physical level to practice relaxation around the stimuli to break that pattern that had been ingrained before.
I mean, I've gotten to the point where I may pet one now or what, but I just really prefer to keep our four-legged friends at bay. But the other thing that Pam mentioned, she mentioned needles. That seems to be one of the most common fears, phobias. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about that, because I don't like needles.
Mm-hmm.
And who does like them? I mean, nobody likes needles. I don't think I've ever met anyone who likes them. But there's a difference, I think, between not liking them and just being terrified of them.
Yes. Well, in Pam's case, was there a cause that you can recall with needles? Because it doesn't have to be, but I'm just curious.
No, it's just that I'm fearful, and I think I read somewhere once I had surgery when I was an infant.
Mm.
And even though I don't remember it,
mm-hmm.
they say, the article said, most people who have had surgery over as an infant or as a child fear doctors and fear needles.
Yeah.
I am better at it now. I have some great doctors, or nurses, who when I do go and get my blood, they know me,
mm-hmm.
and she's so good. I do not look at the needle going into my arm. I cannot watch people put the needle into my arm, but mm-hmm. I can deal with it a whole lot better than I could, say, 10, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
One more comment I want to make. The woman said that she can't go into the shower or close her eyes, and she didn't mention the movies. She said it was because of a couple of movies, and I'll bet you I cannot close my eyes for a long period of time in the shower, and you know why. There's one movie, and his name was Norman Bates.
Yeah,
that
Psycho.
Movie,
yeah.
Yeah, I cannot close my eyes in the shower. No way.
I think many generations have been terrorized by that. I mean, it crosses my mind every now and then. I got to admit, that whole shower scene is a
yeah, doo-doo. That shower scene.
But you know what? I think, Dr. Cutts, when you're talking about not closing your eyes in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
Norman Bates and Psycho notwithstanding, I think that, you know, if you're in the shower, you're completely naked. And so that feeling of complete vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
I think that really contributes to, you want to see whatever's coming,
right.
whatever it is, you know, because if you're naked, you are just completely exposed, literally, figuratively, the whole bit. And so that makes a lot of sense to me. And I would also say on the needles thing, even some of the youngest patients, you see this thing coming, you.
Oh yeah.
I remember when my daughter was getting her her vaccinations when she was little. And of course, you know, she was just the cutest little thing and she had the plumpest little thighs. And, you know, and she saw the needle, but she didn't know what it was.
Right. Until it stung her.
Until it stung her. And then there was that delay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 5 second delay as the pain went from thigh to her brain. And it took a long time for her. And I'm sure quite a few children.
And again, they learned, okay, this thing causes great pain and shock, and when you're that age, you can't process that. That seems like an attack, you know, so it is, you know, a lot of children are afraid of needles, but when it continues, you know, past that age where you can't understand, especially if it gets to the level of phobia, it can be debilitating. And again, though, there are treatments for it, you know, cognitive behavioral treatment, as I mentioned before, systematic desensitization, where you slowly progress the person into the stimuli while teaching them to relax at the same time, hypnotherapy, those can all be very effective.
I'm sure. Pam, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about fears and phobias. What are you afraid of? This is our Halloween night conversation. One of the things that I've noticed that some fears or even phobias can be passed down based on how a parent reacts to things. And can't you teach children to be afraid of things that perhaps they normally would not be?
Yes, definitely. You can also help to teach them to be not afraid of things that they might be. So yes, those fears can be passed down. Because again, when you're a child, you're very impressionable and your brain is forming. And so, you know, that's why that's the time you go to school and there's a lot of repetition. It is so that learning can take place. So, you know, you can learn things that are helpful as well as learning things that are not helpful.
Are women more likely to develop anxiety orders than men? Disorders?
Yes. Women are more likely to have anxiety disorders and specifically to have phobias.
Why
I don't remember
is that?
What the exact breakdown is, but women are more likely.
Do you know why that is?
I don't know why that is. I haven't read any studies as to why that gender difference or sex difference in terms of the disorders.
Is there a correlation between people who are naturally shy and fears or phobias?
That's another good question that I don't know the answer to, because I would have to read the scientific literature on. But it's an interesting question. What makes you ask that?
Well, because it seems to me that shyness, for example, and obviously I am not a clinician, but shyness would, people who are shy are somewhat reticent to go all in when it comes to speaking before crowds, speaking to individuals. I don't know if shyness would be considered a form of fear or phobia, where you may just have some people who just prefer, even children who may just prefer not to engage.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, again, I haven't read the literature on this specifically. I would imagine, though, that there's probably some correlation between shyness and certain fears, like you mentioned, speaking in front of crowds, maybe something like social anxiety. You know, there are a lot of people who have social anxiety disorders of going, being in groups of people saying the wrong thing. You know, there are people who are almost debilitated, or some who are debilitated by that. So I would imagine there may be a correlation between being shy and some of those specific phobias. But you also make a good point, is that we also have to allow for the diversity of how people are.
Mm-hmm.
There are introverts and there are extroverts. There are people who are somewhere in between. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you are afraid. It could just be that you prefer to be more quiet, or you get your energy, you know, in terms of being an introvert or an extrovert. It has to do with where you get energy. So people who are extroverted feel energized when they get around people, and they seek their energy by going out and socializing. Then there are people who feel more energized or get their energy restored by being on their own.
You know, we've had some fun tonight, but I do want to ask about, you know, something that is, you know, really quite serious. There have been, and I'm speaking anecdotally, I've had conversations with people who are afraid of crowds, but the reason that they give has less to do with the crowd and more to do with their belief that there is an element of danger within the crowd. Again, this is a post 9/11 thing. Yeah. And can you talk to me a little bit about that? Because you do have those people who are afraid that, as they say, something could pop off in the crowd. And then you have people who may be afraid of the, of crowds. Is that a claustrophobic thing? Is that a fear of people? Talk to me about that.
Well, they can combine, but I'll start with the fear of crowds, or, you know, typically it's known as agoraphobia. You're right. It's not just the crowd itself. It is the feeling that something could happen and they would not be able to find easy escape or protection. Sometimes what happens is people might have a panic attack while out in the open in a crowd, and then that is what they're afraid of. They're afraid of having that another panic attack and being out there, so to speak, you know, where they can't find protection. So there's something rational about, you know, if something happened in a crowd, but again, it's a phobia when it gets to the point that, you know, you can't go anywhere near a crowd. Now, the good news is that that's something you can avoid, but if it's to the point where you're having panic attacks or if it's limiting your life in some way, then, you know, and for all of these things, and anybody listening, I would recommend, you know, getting treatment for these things. They're not things, you know, even though you might have had them your entire life, it doesn't mean that you can't get help with them and become free of these phobias.
Mm-hmm. And do you have, and you touched on something that I thought was interesting. You have some people who may have anxiety, panic attacks, and they are afraid of that.
Yes. Yeah. And that's common with agoraphobia specifically. They might have a panic attack first, and they have that trapped feeling, and so then after that, they want to stay away from those situations for fear that they might have another panic attack, and they will feel embarrassed, you know, or helpless, which is a part of what that whole, where you get into the social phobia, is that fear of, you know, being embarrassed or helpless or exposed in front of other people.
Mm. Do you have any phobias?
No, I do not, luckily.
Oh, now, because I follow you on Instagram, and I recommend anyone to follow Dr. Cutts on Instagram because she's just fascinating. Because actually you are a nature lover,
yes,
and you actually embrace many of the things that a lot of people are afraid of: snakes and frogs and
snakes, frogs,
and spiders,
crawly
and,
things, the yeah. spiders. I never had a fear reaction to them. As a matter of fact, I find them fascinating. You know, I don't see, you know, things like a snake or a spider as any different than a beautiful exotic bird or, you know, any kind of, I really love animals and nature so much that I just really find them fascinating. So I don't have I think again also people have very different temperaments. You know, you talked about being shy, or, you know, we talked about being introverted and extroverted. I tend not to react fearfully to a lot of situations and stimuli that other people might find fear inducing.
Final thoughts about fears, phobias, and anxiety. What do you tell folks when they are confronted suddenly or even more broadly with the things that really, really put them on edge?
The final thought would be to not be ashamed of this and not to feel as if there's something wrong with you or that you are different from other people, because phobias are a very common thing, you know, as are, you know, the lesser, they're not diagnosable, but the anxieties or the fears. So for one thing, you know, not to be ashamed of it in any way. And then secondly, to really explore getting help with it. They're very treatable issues. And, you know, why not experience that freedom in your life where you've been previously restricted?
Yeah. Well, Dr. Nicole Cutts, I want to thank you so much for spending this Halloween night with us and talking about those fears and phobias and things that you might be.
Thank you. Yes, I'm behind on my trick-or-treating. I got to get out there.
Yeah, what are you dressed as tonight? That's because I know you do a costume or two.
It's going to be, I'll post it on my social media. You'll get to see it later.
But it's not the cat from last year, is it?
No, it's not the cat.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
you're done with the cat.
Is it a dog? That's frightening.
Now I'm going to change it to a dog just for you.
Yeah, just for me. Dr. Nicole Cutts, thank you so much. Good to talk to you. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, October 31st. If you are out and about tonight, please be careful. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.
It was a Saturday evening, if I remember it right. And we had just gotten back off tour last night. So the gang and I thought that it would be groovy if we summon up the posse and dumb rush the movies. I got Angie, Jeff got Tina. Betty Rock got some girl I've never seen in my life. That was alright though, cause the lady was chill. Then we dipped to the theater, set to Ill, buggin', Cole having a ball. And something about Elm Street was the movie we saw. The way it started was decent, you know, nothing real fancy about this homeboy named Fred and this girl named Nancy. But word, when it was over, I said, yo, that was death. And everything seemed alright when we left.
The Howard University Radio